It's here, the commander of your dreams. It's got the synergies for landfall and the colors that you've been dying to play. Then, it has amazing potential for all the spellslinger cards with magecraft that you've been looking at. And it acts as a lord for your favorite tribe to boot. You dive into building it. Everything's coming together. It's all clicking. Your cup runneth over with options. Now, how are you going to pare this list down from 300 cards? Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have another lesson from CEDH. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. Not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, but there are lessons to be learned from how people are brewing with the most powerful cards available. And if you've been following a lot of CEDH talk, you may have heard the idea of a potential commander having interesting tension in their deck. If you've ever wondered what that meant, well, that's our conversation today. We'll start a discussion outside of the CEDH metagame with one of my favorite casual podcasts. The Commander's Brew is a budget decklist podcast where Andy and Sean refer to cards that are simple role players in your deck, which fill a common and boring but important slot as your vegetables, as in you have to eat your vegetables. These include things like ramp spells, card draw, and answers. Ramp spells in this modern age of Commander, well, you can't be in a position where you're behind your opponents on mana. All decks need some way to ramp ahead and be able to take multiple game actions. Green has it easy with Dorks and Land Ramp, but most decks which lack green will lean to Mana Rocks for an alternative. And when it comes to card advantage, you don't necessarily need draw a card or draw X cards printed on a particular card, but you do need ways to take game actions on your turn. You could be getting creatures back out of your graveyard, drawing extra cards, impulse drawing out from red, or going deep on Necropotence. You just need to be able to take those actions, and you need the fuel to be able to do so. Ramp and card draw help you achieve the minimum threshold for consistency that your deck needs to remain at parity within your playgroup. Answers are also necessities. If you cannot interact with your opponent's game plans, the person who hits their critical turn first will most likely be the person to win. If no one else can interact with somebody when they are going for it, well, they're going to get there. These are the vegetables that every deck needs: ramp, card draw, and answers. If you remember our talk about game actions and the action economy, the reason these vegetables are so essential is that they let you perform powerful game actions. They put cards into play, which puts you ahead on mana so you can take more potential game actions on later turns. They put more cards into your hand to take game actions with, and they move cards into your opponent's graveyards or exile to deny them the game actions they want to play. Decks also want cards which synergize with their game plan. As a very basic example, consider Marwyn the Nurturer. She wants lots and lots of elves to trigger her ability, give her additional +1/+1 counters, and allow her to thus produce even more mana. On a more broad sense, Merrin of Clan Nel'Toth wants lots of creatures in her deck to recur more easily with her ability, and Muldrotha the Gravetide wants a good mix of different card types, but a heavy focus on permanents, so creatures, artifacts, enchantments, and even planeswalkers, to get the most use out of her ability. But these decks still need their vegetables in order to be able to be functional and take the game actions that they need. Tension in deck building, the topic of today's episode, arises from this competition for slots in a deck, the struggle between what your commander wants and what your deck needs in order to function. In CEDH, you'll often hear players talk about the card quality in their deck. A classic example in CEDH of how this process evolved was during the heyday of Flash Hulk. Hulk piles represented creature cards in the deck which had few uses other than to perform the game-winning combo the deck was aiming for. Let's take a look at the original pile seen in Breakfast Hulk. This package was fairly bulky, requiring number 1, Cephalet Illusionist, Nomad's Encore, Grand Abolisher, and Hapless Researcher, four creatures as part of our package so far, in addition to both Protean Hulk and Flash, up to 6 slots now, with Narc Amoeba in the deck, which can come into play for free after milling your library so you can cast Dread Return, now up to 8 slots, in order to get Laboratory Maniac into play, slot number 9. And then draw a card by sacrificing Hapless Researcher from an empty library in order to win the game. That is a lot of card quality sacrificed, almost 10% of your deck, to a combo which you only ever really wanted to see two of which means Flash and Protean Hulk, as cards in your hand. The other ones would just be stuck there and just be dead. Every slot devoted to your Hulk package is a slot not devoted to ramp, card draw, or answers. While a good example, the main thing we want to focus on here are commanders who bring with them significant tension in deck building. Let's look at one of the new options for legendary creatures from Midnight Hunt. Among them, we have a fascinating example in the mono-blue legend, Lear, Disciple of the Drowned. Lear is 3 and 2 blue for a legendary creature human wizard, a 3-4, with the abilities Spells Can't Be Countered, and each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard has flashback. The flashback cost is equal to that card's mana cost. The tension is printed right there on the card. Spells can't be countered, and instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard have flashback. If we look at a mono-blue deck, Lear turns off some of our best chances to interact with our opponent's game plans, losing us access to counterspells. At the same time, it also means that the most common way to interact with our instants and sorceries is turned off for our opponents. They no longer have the ability to counter our spells either. What this means is we're going to need to dig deeper into Blue's catalog to find cards which do what we want, which provide us the vegetables we need in order to interact with our opponents and have answers for their game actions. We can't get counterspells, but we can get counterspell-like cards which don't actually counter the spell. Cards like Unsubstantiate, or cards which can change the target of another spell like Misdirection, can fill in for counterspell, while leaning into some of Blue's suite of removal, which often comes in the form of bounce, but also includes creature interaction like rapid hybridization in order to answer what our opponents are doing. On the extreme opposite end of the spectrum, we have cards like Tatiova, Benthic Druid. Tatiova wants us to put lands into play. All of our normal land-based ramp from green works just fine with her. She's not asking for anything really specific out of us. While we might want to run a few extra ways to ramp ahead, Tatiova even spots us the excess drawing power. The tension in building Tatiova is far lower than the tension in building Lear. Essentially, a deck with a higher tension in deck building is going to require more unique cards. So does this mean that you're bad for building Tatiova and real commander players will try to build harder decks like Lear? Honestly, this is a really fine line to walk. Low tension decks are a great way for new players to get into the format. They can often invest in cards which are staples, useful in multiple different decks, while high-tension decks might instead demand that they go deeper into niche cards which are less useful in their future decks. Low-tension decks, on the other hand, do risk being accidentally powerful. Particularly for players who are new and have trouble estimating the power of a deck, a low-tension deck can be disruptive to casual games unintentionally. As an example, let's look at two cards printed in the Brawl decks, Korvald and Shulane. These both provide very easy access to card advantage with a minuscule cost, often running away with the game once they stick to the board. Since both of them have access to green, they're often coming down on turns 3 or 4, and even with a clock that may be a few turns long, a critical turn of 3.5 to 4.5 is often much too early for other casual decks to be able to interact with meaningfully. By the time someone has the ability to answer Korvold or Shulane, the damage is often done, and the pile of those decks is usually far enough ahead that the outcome of the game may have already been determined. This is one of the factors which played into the decision of the Rules Committee to ban Golos. Between Golos having access to all five colors and an extremely low-tension deck, where basically all Golos wanted you to do was get to 5 mana, and he then spotted you one of the lands you needed in order to recast him if he was removed, well, it didn't take very much. It was a very low-tension deck. This led to it becoming one of the most built commanders of all times. And it was also one that could be extremely difficult for more casual tables to meaningfully interact with. Removing their commander just meant they got to go get another land, which, while it did allow for some very interesting land-based decks, like the Maze's End deck, it often just became the de facto best choice for a deck that was looking to play with all five colors. We're not going to go too deep on the banning of Golos, but it is an interesting case study in a very low-tension commander being potentially disruptive. Finding that level of tension that you enjoy in deck building, and one that also still brings good games to your playgroup, that's the happy medium. You can also overcome the potential pitfalls of a low-tension deck by adding specific restrictions into how you brew. Shoutouts to Ryan of Commander Cookout Podcast and Commander Ad Populum, who has been delving into this topic recently, both on his own show, Commander Ad Populum, as well as with his co-host Brando on Commander Cookout Podcast. Ryan discussed what he was going through trying to build a mono blue deck, and theoretically how to remove the stigma surrounding a mono blue deck. And that should be the goal. The goal should always try to be to build the deck that you want with intent, the goal of playing at a particular table. The deck should still matter to you and should still speak to you, but at the same time, it should be built with the intent of coming to a particular table where people are expecting a particular critical turn and are equipped to handle a particular clock. You can add your own tension into the deck building process by adding certain stipulations, the way Dana at EDH RecCast and Commander Central does. You might decide that your Muldrotha the Gravetide deck is only going to include hippos. Or you might decide that your Merrin of Clan Nel'Toth deck is actually going to be a plant tribal deck. Well, that could be pretty cool too. There's a lot of different ways that you could try to approach a given deck. Maybe your Chulainn deck is not even going to include any mana dorks. Maybe you're going to choose Karuga as your companion, which means you can't have anything that costs less than 3 mana value in your deck. Companions represent a great way to introduce additional tension into your deck building, and can be a really great way to revitalize that spark for brewing. Tension in deck building can be great if you feel like you're really burned out on the staples, bored of seeing the same cards over and over again. Picking a commander or commanders who point you down a less explored path, which force you to make choices between their wants and their needs, can be a really refreshing way to build something new. What do you think? Do you have any commanders who were an experiment in high-tension deck building, where their wants and their needs often clashed? Did the deck work out? Or are there some low-tension commanders who you still enjoy after you put your own twist into them? Let us know. Leave us a comment on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. Add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG, or send us an email, where we are gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.